Hey guys, it's Josh Eppard from Coheed and Cambria. Do you like science fiction? Do you also like rock music? Then you gotta check out the All Things Coheed podcast. Wait, if you're already listening to this, then you probably are into those things. In that case, I ask, why are you listening to this if you don't like science fiction and rock music? What the hell is wrong with you?
That aside, we do have a few extra questions that are not specifically drum set confessional related that we want to know if we could run by you real quick.
Yeah, of course.
Where the fuck is Red Dawn and where is my goddamn Pain Awake? I've been waiting. I've been excited. What the fuck, dude?
Man, dude, you know, you have every right to be picked. Wait, we didn't take money from you, did we?
No, not at all.
I just want to see it.
You're chill.
No, we.
I'm like Red Dawn. It's gonna be fucking concept about the fucking commies or some shit. I'm fucking excited. You know?
Yo, the shit that we recorded for it too was so ill. Yeah, let me just tell you this: it's 100% on upgrade. Like I did all my parts. I'm just kidding. It's Tom did everything, and then it's me. I'm like, dude. I'll tell you this: I don't mean to be controversial or I never faked it ever. Like it was always real. It was always genuine inspiration. It was always something that, you know, whether it was good, whether it was bad, it was real. And I just sometimes, maybe I'll feel differently in an hour. I don't know. But lately I just feel like I've kind of not outgrown, but just, it's just not there. And I don't know how to, that's specifically with the Red Dawn thing. But man, the shit we recorded was dope. Holy shit. All the music is taken from Red Dawn. So it's all sampled from the movie. Maybe I'll send, yo, give me your email. I'll send you some of the shit. It's super rough, dude. Like not mixed at all. Like recorded in the bedroom, but dude, it's dope. You got to kind of use your imagination, but there's some really sick shit.
Oh, for sure.
The Pain Awake shit was like, you know, I don't know, man. You know, honestly, I start working on a record of my own when I'm a little bit unhappy in Coheed. When we made
Going to radio is fucking angry.
Yeah, because like when we made Color Before the Sun, I was just like, what the fuck, man? Now I love that record. I don't dislike the record. I get it now. I think at the time I was angry, but I'm not anymore.
Well, here's a real question then. How did you feel when Year of the Black Rainbow came out?
Oh, by that time, I really liked it. I had a little bit of distance. I'll tell you a funny story, though. I was back on a major label with a different band, Terrible Things. We were on Universal. You know, my career is picking back up. I don't even have a Twitter. Somehow Fred Mascherino finds, I'm trying to hide. And Fred Mascherino finds me, tells me we're going to put together the next Led Zeppelin. I'm like, all right, I'm in. And then we signed to Universal. I'm like, all right, I'm back on a major label. I mean, that right there like was like, all right, I know really talented musicians that go their whole lives trying to get to the major label deal. And I just signed like my fourth one. I must be pretty good at this. Like, and I give Terrible Things so much credit. It really like taught me so much about myself, re-engaged how I love this. But while we made that record, Here We Are Juggernaut came out and I watched it. And then at one point, I don't realize this, like a week later, Fred grabs me and he's like, hey man, it's a little weird that you walk around singing your old band song all day. I didn't even realize I was doing it. I did not realize I was doing it. Just shit belting it out because the drum room, the live room was downstairs at the studio. So I'm down there alone, not realizing there's 31 microphones around and they're all hot. And I'm just belting out "Here We Are, Juggernaut" because I liked it. I didn't like Claudio singing the choir part. I thought like it would have been so Pink Floyd to get an opera singer to do that. But the fact that it was Claude was like ultra cheesy to me. But like, other than that, I love that song. I think that's a fucking fantastic song. Or wait, is that The Broken? They released The Broken and Here We Are, Juggernaut. I found them both at the same time. The record wasn't out. Okay, I'm right about that. Maybe which one has the... That's The Broken.
Yeah.
So The Broken, that's the one thing. But I would sit there and sing it because I love the melody so much. I'd sit there and sing it. And I'd sing here with the chorus to Here We Are, Juggernaut at the top of my fucking lungs. And when Fred said that to me, I was dead embarrassed, dude. I was like, oh shit, I am doing that, aren't I? And Fred said to me, he goes, see, and this is, I want to make sure this is clear. This is Fred. This is a lifetime ago. I know he doesn't feel this way anymore, but he said at the time, he said, see, that's the difference between me and you. I don't feel that way about my old band. And I could tell it bothered him. And it was a real eye-opening moment to me. And I was like, holy shit, man. I'm just like walking around, belting out Coheed songs because I am a fan. We played like the producer of that record. So Fred, the producer's best friend, had played some of the drums for Fred. And then I came in and replaced the producer's best friend, which producers are hard on drummers. How do you think they are on drummers when you replace their best friend? We're lifelong friends, me and that producer, but it took a lot of good attitude and a lot of big smiles. And because he knows I'm dope, but like his best friend is dope too. Like just as dope as me. But like I played some Coheed. He was like, what's a song from Coheed you would play that really like embodies what you loved about the band? And I played him The Crowing. I was like, this is the shit that to me was like, was sick and was dope. And then that metal section comes up where I'm flying around the kit. We got the kind of like somewhat dried up sound where the drums are really popping. And I stood up off the chair and started headbanging. And that's another time that Fred was like, he made a joke this time. And he's like, see, I never listened to TBS and do that. And I felt a little silly doing it because I'm a fan, dude. I'm a fan. Maybe that's why I get along so well with the fans of the band. Is because I'm a fan too. I really am. I'm learning right now, going to radio is not as subtle as I maybe had meant it to be.
yeah, man, I think I got it. I think I got the message. Oops. On that one.
Oops. Yeah, and it's supposed to sound like Coheed. It's supposed to sound like Second Stage era Coheed. But yeah, I don't know. The radio to me felt, and maybe this was naive and like young of me, but I felt like it was like beneath us to even care what the radio thinks. Like, and maybe again, I want to make sure those were the thoughts of a younger me that maybe wasn't looking at the big picture. But like, then again, I still feel that way. Honestly, what Coheed does to me is so transcends the fucking stupid radio. I don't give a shit about the radio. I think what we make is art. I think all music is art, but like I view Coheed as very important. You know, it's been a learning curve for me. Like, you know, the first three records, like I'd be working on Coheed records. Claudio's not even there and I'm working on the records. Like that's, you know, it was different when I came back. It was, and it still is. It's, you know, I've had to kind of accept it'll never be what it was on the first three records. And that's okay. You know, I dedicated my life to this band. I'm not going to like walk away because of that, but do I wish it was? Yeah, of course. And that going to radio was the song was me coming to terms with that and expressing some of my anger about that. Like, I just view what we do as like, if the radio came to us, great, fine. We write pop songs. I love the pop element of the band, but like trying to like whittle songs down to 3 minutes. So maybe a radio that's never even really fucked with us will play us just seemed odd to me. And like, you know, stupid, but I don't feel that way really anymore. I'm saying at the time, but Yeah, Rob, I'll send you some of that Red Dawn shit. I'm telling you, some of it's really dope. But poor Upgrade. Upgrade's like the hardest working guy, man. Like he gave up because he would call me like once a month, like, yo, I'll fly to New York. Let's record this shit. And I would try. I would sit down to write and just, I didn't really like what I came up with, you know? I'm 43 years old, man. What do you want me to rap about? Building a deck and like mopping my floors? That's what I do at home now. I live a very like domestic, although I did. The last song I wrote was called I'm Too Old for This Shit. And it's all about how like, you know, straight and narrow my life is now. Sorry, longest answers ever. I'm too long tonight. Sorry. I have fucking pancreatitis over here. I'm all sick and shit.
You know, you brought up Terrible Things. We had it on our list. We'll jump to that. That was actually the last concert I went to before I got married. And awesome. Holy shit. That was so, it was awesome. Is there a possibility, because so many people were unable to go to Philly for that show, will that ever happen again? Will you ever play Under the Moors and the White Man Dingoes, The Ghetto's Trying to Kill Me? Will that ever see a live performance?
I mean, I'm not in the White Man Dingoes, but I like did some stuff with them, but I thought that record was like one of the most brilliant things that I ever heard. You know, more, I think about starting a band with Anthony once a week, but like sometimes you come across musicians that are like so talented. You're like, I sent Anthony some music to sing on and he sang on it. And it was like, Anthony exists in a place that like, not many people go, right? He's like, you know, early on with the Moors, it was like, I got told he was in the band. It wasn't my decision. And I was like, yo, this dude sounds just like Claudio. I don't want this guy in the band. But Anthony was a kid. He was a child and he was influenced by Claudio. But at that time, he could kind of sound like anybody. He could kind of sound like my brother. He could sound like Claudio. He could sound like Daryl from Glassjaw. Anthony now has like found his own voice. He's like one of the greatest musicians I've ever met. And I think about starting a different band with him literally once a week. I mean, I was thinking about it the other day, like, but I don't think I'm good enough to fuck with Anthony. He's that good. And he's just prolific. He's brilliant. But will the Moors, I don't know. Anthony sometimes he'll tell me, he'll be like, dude, the Moors was the one time in life that I really gelled with a musician. And it was like, really, dude, we were writing these like, I'm like a fucking junkie writing these emo songs, but we had fun and I really did enjoy it. Terrible Things. I have this like fantasy that we'll do another record together. I'll call Fred after this and say, let's make a Terrible Things record. Cause that record's kind of found an audience like so long after the fact. That record kind of gets brought up a lot. And checks show up that I'm like, oh, somebody's listening to this. Like, they're not big by any means, but like somebody's listening to it, which makes me really happy. I thought it was a fantastic record. You know, for my taste, it's a little safe. You know, it's like I wanted to come out with a statement and a little bit more edge. But Fred's a terrific songwriter, so they're great songs. And maybe we will do. So we had a blast in Philly. That was a lot of fun for us. But Fred's super busy with The Color Fred. I don't know that he wants. And then I think he's playing with Say Anything now. So I don't know, but we'll see. The answer to all that is we'll see. Probably not. White Man Dingoes, though, is one of the most brilliant records like that I ever heard. And like those guys, I wish they'd get back together and do some shit and then invite me. I wish they'd invite me to come because that shit was dope as fuck. Yeah, we'll see. It's always a we'll see, Dev. I wish I had a better answer for it.
I have a question. Speaking of we'll see. More specifically towards Robert, are you excited for the SS Never Ender 2? Are you going? Why aren't we having Drum Set Confessional on SS Never Ender 2?
Well,
good question.
There's a couple of answers to that. First, you know, I still have my full-time job and I teach for a living. And I just can't go to my dean and my college students and say, hey, you know what? I might be gone for a week in the middle of October. So, you know, that's timing-wise, it's hard. If the cruiser is still going on when I retire in a couple of years, then I'll be on there. I'll be the first one on the ship. You know, the planning for the cruise started long before Josh and I started to put this thing together. So it, you know, it certainly wasn't early enough during kind of, I guess, the programmatic planning phase for the cruise. But, you know, we would love to do one, you know, and I think it could happen. But, you know, we also have worked very hard to try to create an entity that's identifiably different from the band. And certainly I know that, look, I know if it would sell out on a cruise like that, you know, even if you did like an added charge to come to this, I know it would sell out on a cruise like that. But, you know, if anybody in management is listening, we'll talk about it for future cruises for sure, because I think that would be a fun night.
Oddly enough, Blaze's wife is the one who's like texting me. Blaze, our manager's wife, is like a good friend of mine. I love Jen. She's such a sweetheart. She's like, why aren't you doing Drum Tech Confessional on the cruise? I'm like, ask your fucking husband. Like, it's like pulling teeth to get you guys to tweet something for us, you motherfuckers. Like, you know, I've only dedicated my entire life. I was there before you, Blaze, you motherfucker.
Bro, fucking know. I trust me, man. Everything you guys have been saying, whether it's been about, oh, you know, we want to be kind of, you know, near the band, but we're trying to offer something different. Motherfucker, that's us, okay?
Yeah.
You want to talk about that? You're talking about getting on the cruise? I think it was like a week before the cruise was announced. We had heard inklings that it was coming. I sent emails. I contacted Sixthman. I was like, how fucking cool would it be to get the Coheed podcast to record a live episode on the cruise? It'd be tough as shit. Be tough as nails. You know what I mean?
Yeah, agree.
And it just doesn't happen because nobody responds. It's shitty. It's the way the business works, whatever. I'm super
not for
pissed
everybody.
I don't get to go. Yeah.
Not for everybody, dude. It's, you know, man, I obviously have to choose my words carefully here, but like, you know, we don't feel like we get a ton of support from the band anyway. So it's like, not personally, but like, you know, I get it too. Like they're busy, but it can be hard. This is all part of what makes it hard. I don't think that they're like champing at the bit to try to help us, and that's okay. That's fine. It's always like that. It's like that with everything I do.
Especially when they're like needing more experiences and something different than last year. It's like you have these small communities of like subsets of Coheed fans that could do shit. Like my girlfriend is lucky enough to be playing on the cruise in a Coheed cover band. I'm super fucking excited about it. I'll have to see recordings of it because I can't get on the cruise, but they're going to be playing.
She couldn't bring you with her? She couldn't bring you with her?
No, it's expensive, man. I got a certain salary.
Wait, but does the Coheed cover band, and forgive me for not
they
knowing,
are
dude,
not paying for rooms. So they Blue paid for their own room.
Wait. Your girlfriend who's playing in the Coheed cover band on the cruise.
Yeah.
She's not paying to go on the cruise, though.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Neverenders, I think they were called last time, and they played at the Faint of Hearts bar.
Yeah, it was like one of the most fun things on the cruise that everyone talked about. This is disappointing to hear, you guys. You got, you know,
again. Like I don't come from money, and you know, it's just not the way it is. I haven't been to a Coheed show since Mastodon, I think, but like, you know, I wish I could go on the cruise so fucking bad, especially since last year I missed all the Amory War shit. You know, it's sad, but I'm excited, but sad. It's really hard to put into words, but you know, it is what it is. I'm excited to get to play it all, but
dude, I hear you. And I know your goal wasn't to like, I'm just shocked that they're not. The first thing I would have done after that cruise was be like, how do we get you guys here next year? What do you need? Because it was so fun. I'm sitting in with the band. I'm coming up to play with that band. I think we're going to do Evagri of the Faithful. Has your girlfriend told you about this?
Oh,
I'm sitting in with her band to play Evagri. Oh, shit. Maybe it's supposed to be a surprise. She should know about this. I talked to the other people she plays with.
Ooh, Sean Redman and all them?
Yeah, dude. Like,
what the fuck?
What's the dude? Oh, he's going to kill me for not remembering his name. What's the guy that played? He used to kind of date Jess or be friends with Jess, and he used to play in the Polyphonic Spree.
Oh, fuck. I don't trust me, man. I'm bad with names, too.
I really am bad with names. I know faces. But yeah, he asked me and some of the guys were there. And I was like, dude, I'm in. Because it was so fun. It's a little disappointing to hear that. But I get, you know, it's actually a point of privilege that I sit at. I get to be removed from this stuff. But then you end up hearing things that are just like, oh, wow. Like, the support for these cruises is overwhelming. We couldn't have threw a couple cabins at the people that, like, one of the top three things I hear about is that band in the Faint of Hearts bar. I went there, me and Zach singing Al the Killer, arm in arm, having a great time. It was such an important thing. That's business order number one that I would have done, is make sure they can come on the next one. What do you need to come? Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Rob. I know that wasn't your goal, but that's a drag, man.
It is what it is. But I'm like, all that aside, like, I'm super excited for it. Like, there's going to be so much good shit. You know, we're celebrating In Keeping Secrets this time around. It's going to be fucking awesome because I love that record. The good Apollo one, hopefully, if there is another one, I'll, you know, give me a couple of years, I'll save up something and figure something out. But that's what I'm excited about.
Imagine we just did the first two records and then did do a good Apollo one. I guess, bro, stranger things have happened, but
I wouldn't be surprised, but still. anyway, that was a drag. My bad.
That would be the most Coheed thing ever.
It totally would.
So Drumset Confessionals. There was 2 days you guys did an actual live showing of this. And yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the first evening was a talk, conversation between both of you. And then the second night you were behind the kit. Was that kind of like a Josh Epper drum playthrough thing where you were, you know, maybe going through some of the tracks? Was it like rudiments, or was it more of a conversation of you just behind the kit kind of progressing?
All of the above. By the way, we had no idea what it was. As I walked on stage, we were like, well, we don't know what this is. Let's see what happens. It was fun. I had to tell Rob, I was like, man, I can't help it. I just view this as more of the first night. Even though the second night was probably like a more natural type of thing. I just know if we're going to get super drum nerdy, it's a much more kind of narrow pool to draw from. Whereas I want to talk to kids at school. I want to talk to kids that don't care, don't know what Coheed and Cambria is. But again, you know, it's hard to get kids to engage. It's hard to get kids to come. We did like outreach days at the school where I'm like teaching classes and hanging out, and you know, maybe a handful of them at most came, and like it's tough. Kids, you know, they're off doing kid shit. But I want to, you know, we're going to speak at high schools. I just think as fun and kind of free as sitting behind the kit was, we're going to do those. But that's not, to me, the main focus. I think those should be in settings more like music stores, maybe Guitar Center, something like that. And we do those. But maybe if we did one on the cruise, it would be that behind the drum set. But I can't help, you know, you're inspired by what you're inspired by. I can't help but think of this in terms of like a bit more scholarly, a bit more a conversation between me and Rob in front of an audience where like, one thing I wish we did was kind of take more questions. We did that, but I wish we did more of that. But I just feel like there's really a lot of good to be dredged there. And, you know, I did every like anti-drug program coming up. If you had asked me when I was 8 years old, if I'd ever do drugs, the answer was hell no, you know, like no way. Cause I was armed with the DARE program and stuff, but somewhere along the way, I don't know whether it failed me or I failed it, a combination of the two, but I want to speak to not just young people, but in those college settings, I want to speak to young people who are on the way to a world where a lot of us end up succumbing to drugs, man. A lot more. If you'd asked me at college age if I would ever try heroin, my answer, I'd laugh at you. Of course not. And I just think that maybe through my story and through a sharing of stories that we can get to a place to better arm. Again, I don't mean to sound like self-righteous or sanctimonious or anything, but better arm people and just talk about this shit. I think that's important. But yeah, the drum thing was fun. It was really fun. It was funny. You know, you put me in front of an audience of Coheed fans, I'll talk some shit. I did. I talked some shit about the band in a fun way, you know, and like talked about making the records, talked about certain parts, talked about like my drum philosophy, which, you know, is pretty unique in this like day and age, actually, because, you know, I grew up in a different time and, you know, all the adults that I was around were hammering into my head, groove, pocket, play for the song. And then really, it's like, if I had just held on to my drum philosophy from when I was 15 years old, I'd probably be mega famous right now. At 15, I thought it was all about my big fills. And I kind of had this, what I view now as like a more immature mindset. Well, it was, but, you know, my drum philosophy ended up getting kind of molded, cultivated by guys like, and I said this at the drum thing, Jerry Murata, or really like Levon Helm, even though you wouldn't really know it. Levon told me when I was 12 or 13, I'm sure you've heard the story before, but he asked me, because my dad was in a band with Levon for years. Levon Helm's from the band. I mean, they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Out on Cripple Creek, she made me with my soul. I should probably know the name of the words to the song, but I don't really. But he said to me, how many piece kit you play? And I had to think about it because I'm 12 and I'm like all nervous. And I'm like, even though I don't know who Levon Helm is, I could tell all the adults, like he's very revered. And I have to think about it. I go, five. He goes, five, huh? That's three drums too many. And then he just walks away from me. And I'm like, what? That guy means just a kick and a snare? What the fuck's this guy talking about? But that is a piece of my philosophy. You know, I almost got kicked out of my band as a kid for playing too many fills. And this older drummer, older at the time to me, you know, he's probably 22, but I'm 13, telling me he saved my, dude, my whole life would be different if it wasn't for this drummer, Robert Burke. His name is Chicken. They wanted to fire me from the band that I was in, three. They wanted to fire me because I was 13 and they were 16. They had made these leaps that I wasn't quite there yet. And it was really funny because like to the audience and to everybody on the outside, I was like, the local paper called me a prodigy, but in the studio, I was having a hard time. It was a lot to throw at a 13-year-old kid who's only been playing for 2 years. And like, sometimes my tempos would move, or sometimes, you know, I didn't approach the drums with like the class and feel of a fucking professional. I was 13 and, you know, they weren't nice about it. So this drummer Chicken, who everybody really respects, the producer tells him, like, I think we're going to get rid of Josh. And Chicken tells him, like, yo, Josh is the best part of this shit. He's the fucking, like, he's the Ringo. He's the Bill. He's the Stuart Copeland of the shit. He's playing some shit that, what the fuck is going on? But we got to tone him down. But you can't fire Josh. And I have no doubt they were going to fire me from me and my brother's band if it wasn't for Chicken. And then I learned a lot from Chicken about playing for the song. And it's just a philosophy. So we talked a lot, whatever, longest answer ever. We talked a lot about that. And I would play things, you know, the drums were so loud in that room, dude. I hit the snare drum and it was too loud for me. It like shook the walls, but I just played a little bit and I showed people some things like, I like to do this. You know, it's like super, you would have loved, Deb, you would have loved it. But the pool is so small, dude. Like, We were drum nerding out. So then I would just tell Coheed stories. And it was really fun. Don't get me wrong. It was way fun. I just think in the colleges is where we could make a big impact. I think both can, but I we're as focused maybe a little bit more on the college thing and speaking in that arena. But the drum set confessional thing in terms of sitting behind a kit, I just view it, I think it'll do well at like guitar centers or at, you know, maybe we do it like we did it at a little venue again, but like that's really geared towards, let's call it what it is, drum nerds. That's like, even though the stories are broad and you get Coheed fans that aren't drummers there, that's more what it's geared towards. But I've talked so long, I forgot what the question was.
No, I think that it's drum nerds music and music nerds for that second night. But I will tell you this, and you know, I had planned for myself a more active role for that second night, where I was going to ask Josh questions and kind of guide things as it goes forward. And after one question, the audience kind of took over. Josh took over interacting directly with the audience. And it was just another piece of evidence of why I need to get him in front of people, because he connects with people. He's got a great story, but on top of it, he's also a great storyteller. And to hear him without any preparation and being hit with questions of all different types in that theater where he sat behind a kit, it was just impressive. And while he was out of his element on the first night when we were, you know, on stage and he doesn't have a drum kit and he's just sitting on a chair across from me, still the great storyteller in him came out and the great communicator in him came out. And we will do more of both, but our emphasis will be on talking more to audiences, high school, college. I'm also working on getting him into nursing and medical conferences, because I think he's got a lot to shed light on in terms of how you deal with an addict from a professional perspective. That's where our focus is going to be. But my job is to get him in front of audiences in any number of different ways.
Speaking of, if this pendulum ever swings back that other way again for like drum set stuff, just in general, Sweetwater might also be a good option as well. They do a lot of stuff with creators. So,
oh, sure. We love the Sweetwater guys.
It's near me. I fucking love that place. I just go there. They got a fucking arcade. It's a good ass time. Anyway, so I assume that you're recording parts for Vaxxis 3, right?
We've
track shit.
I mean, we've demoed.
Demo, bro.
Okay.
Too many songs.
Okay. Answer this question.
Okay. No. Just for me. Just for me. How do you feel about it? Is it good? Are you excited? Are you fucking stoked? Is it just?
It's so whack, dude. This is the most shit we've ever demoed. So, Claude, I just don't believe it when he tells me this is what the record's going to be, because it changes daily. So, yeah, I would say this with every record. But yeah, I feel like it's some of the best shit we ever did. But if we're ever doing a record where it's like, I talked about being angry about The Color Before the Sun. We rehearsed that record in Claudio's basement, and I thought we were about to make the best Coheed record we ever made. Like, The Color Before the Sun is a literal live record. That record is truly more live than most bands' live record. That is recorded live, all of us at the same time. And we went in and did it, and we played Island three times. We cut the record in order. So we played Island like 3-4 times, and the producer goes, "All right, well, we're here. Let's play it again." And we were like, "Nah, that's it, dude. That is literally it. Perfect. Every time. Pick one." We were so well rehearsed. We were so well rehearsed, the producer didn't know what to do with us. He told us, "I've never seen a band come in and have it just licked like this." And he was like, I don't even know what to do. Like, you, which was like a real credit, but it makes you scratch your head while you're paying somebody $100,000 to do a job that they're not, whatever. But they were recording it too. But and I got along famously with that guy. He told me I was the best rock drummer he ever recorded. And we were on fire. So I was disappointed with the way the record ultimately sounded. I can't hear the drums, and that's heartbreaking to a drummer. Like, they're there, but like not like Vaxxis and Vaxxis 2. I mean, Vaxxis 3 has some straight fucking bangers, dude. But like, I'm currently fighting for this one song that I just don't understand how it can't be on the record. It's so fire. But like, you never know, man. Like, Claudio's a maniac, dude. Like, you never know what he's hearing, because the last round, but he told me there's going to be three more he's going to add. And I was like, yo, this one has to be in there. And he pretty much listens to me. So like, I'm really going to fight for this one, because I know you guys will love it. It's dope. It's dope. But the melodies are so, it's just classic, awesome Coheed. It's proggy, but it's not like insane. And it's not like bluesy prog, or it's not like Broadway prog. The shit sounds like it's fucking off in keeping or good Apollo, but not. It's like new, but it's dope. Oh, I can't wait. It's the one song that I listen to because I try not to listen to the shit. Like, I get to know it. I demo it. Then I got to take a break from it because I want it to feel exciting when we record it. One of the problems you run into when you demo stuff and then you don't record it for a while is if you're listening to it all the time, all of a sudden you never see it from over here again. You only see it from here. You know it too well. All of a sudden, you're not really reacting to that melody the way it's going to hit somebody. You're reacting to somebody that's hearing it for the 800,000th time. And those are completely different islands. They're completely different planets. So I know my process, and I've taken a break from it. In fact, when me and Claude did that signing, when they released the Coheed beer in New York City, he played me like a new mix he did of one of the songs. And it was dope. And I was like, yo, I haven't heard this in like, I don't know, a month or two. And this is fire. Some of it's sick, dude. But, you know, we'll see. We have a lot of stuff demoed, like more than we've ever done. So we have a lot to choose from. Yo, Vaxxis 3 is actually a double album. But it's not 3 and 4. No, who knows? We've did our double record. We could right now. Like, we have the material, but...
Crazy.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It's crazy to hear you say it's like second stage in Keeping Secrets, because fucking Vaxxis 2 feels like fucking GA1, like through and through, feels like good Apollo. I don't know if you get that impression, but I feel it. It's fucking crazy. I'm just excited.
Yeah, that's what Claudio always said. He's like, it really reminds him of good in terms of like almost like aesthetically and the way the album goes through. And I was like, oh yeah, no, I hear that. This one, as a drummer, it's like, I really loved that on Vaxxis 2, they said, the reins are off, do your thing. Because
you fucking hear them too. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like, that's the way it should be on a Coheed record. Don't give me this Color Before the Sun shit with these soft fucking drums, man.
Whoa,
like,
whoa, 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 whoa. Careful. Devin's here. That's his favorite record.
Well, listen. I want the drums to be louder too. It's my... don't tell anybody else. It's my favorite part of Coheed. So
yeah, like that's the only reason Color Before the Sun was disappointing to me was just like, it's the best at that time. It was the best I'd ever played. And then a professional drummer friend of mine was like, bro, I got to be honest. Like, I don't understand why you're breaking up that snare fill in Island right in the beginning. And I was like, dude, what do you mean break? There's the kick drums in there. He's like, no, it's not. I was like, dude, I play. What are you trying? I showed him what it is. And he's like, there's a fucking kick drum in there on just the fill. That's just where, you know, it goes, but it cycles between the top of the kit and the kick drum like I do all the time. But he's not that familiar with my playing. So he didn't know there was a kick drum in there. And I was like, damn, like, I'm just like, I'm the hardest hitting drummer I know. And it just feels like I'm barely hitting him because there's a softness to him. But I've grown to really love Color Before the Sun. Like, I love the way that record said. You know what? I give Blaze credit, man. It's exactly what Blaze said it was going to be. He said, it feels a little weird right now, but one day it's going to be this really quirky kind of standout record in the band's catalog. And he was fucking right. That's what it is to me. And I actually really enjoyed that. I always loved the songs. I'm a drummer, dude. I'm clouded. I can never see it as not the drummer if I play on the record, you know? That's also something about missing two records with Coheed. It gives me a perspective that is unique because I got to absorb two Coheed records as not the guy. And I think it gives me a really unique perspective moving forward with the band even now. But when I play on a record, when I'm part of a record, I can't. And I think I'm one of the drummers that removes myself the most, but I can never fully remove myself. I'm still sitting here talking about the drums. People are probably like, they seem plenty loud to me. Well, not to me, motherfucker. So then Vaxxis 1 was a real breath of fresh air. And then Vaxxis 2, like, I told the producer, I was like, yo, you're a drum guy. I don't even think you realize that you're a drum guy. Like, there are things about like the kind of like overly kind of synthesized drum sound sometimes, like where it's like so produced, but the drums sounded so good. I recorded the drums for Vaxxis 2, the entire record, and half of Vaxxis 3. I have the drums for half of Vaxxis 3 already because we did it all in a day and a quarter. The entire record. I recorded all of Vaxxis 2 and half of 3 in a day call it a day and a half. I just was on fire. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes you come in the studio and it's just like not your day, or like, you know, you get a couple songs, but like, you know, you got it better. That did not happen. It was just the great, you know, just like Color Before the Sun. It was like, holy shit, we are like such a well-oiled machine. It felt good. Dude, we did Color Before the Sun in this fucking amazing studio in Nashville. And there was like offices all under the studio. And the people, they're down there writing music for television. They would come up just to watch us record. And, you know, all my shit as like when I was egotistical as a kid is all so clearly born of insecurity. So I'm like nervous they're watching us and saying things like, these guys are a band, they're horrible. You know, that's what I'm thinking. And this really nice, like cute young girl, I say cute, she like reminds me of like my daughter, like probably 18, 19 years old, like cute, sunny disposition. And she was like, little Southern accent. Every time y'all record, I say, I just got to see that drum. I've never seen anybody play like you. And I'm just like, wow. And I felt so good about myself. Like, I was like, oh my God. Like, believe me, most days I look in the mirror, like it's a fight to even convince myself that like I'm halfway deep. I'm hard on myself, dude. That's just, I think that's how a lot of us are. Not just in COVID. I mean, a lot of us, all of people, like, so those moments where you feel like a genuine stroke of confidence like come your way can be really powerful. So that's why I kind of hang on to these stories. But I really like the where Coheed is going arc-wise. I, you know, not story-wise, I mean musically. And I don't think, from what I can tell, Vaxxis 3 is definitely not going to disappoint. We've got to live up to a Vaxxis 2 that was like, a big time kind of, in a lot of ways, a breath of fresh air, because it was very different, but like some straight bangers on that record. So, and so, like production wise, I keep telling those dudes, like, we cannot go back now to a production that sounds like, we can't have Vaxxis 3 be soft. It's got to hit just as hard, if not harder. Like, it's got to come out and be, Vaxxis 2 is like epic. And Vaxxis 1, I think, is a like pretty bare bones production wise, but it sounds good. It was definitely a step above in a wet production wise than Color Before the Sun. But Vaxxis 2 is like a leap. We got to continue. Can't go backwards. So we'll see what happens. Cause that shit's delicate, man. Production on records is so delicate. The wrong drum sound, the wrong kind of guitar doesn't cut through. All of a sudden you take the dopest riff of all time and it just becomes meh. This stuff is very delicate and really important. So hopefully they listen to me. I mean, they want the same thing too, obviously, but you'd be surprised some of these decisions, man. But yeah, we'll see. The record's going to be dope.
It's been a few years since we've interviewed you, but I do want to say, in that time, I received a question and have not had the opportunity to ask you yet, but it's from Casey Crescenzo of The Deer Hunter. Wanted to ask, do you guys use a click track?
Yeah, all the time now, but...
Okay, just want to make sure...
Our first three records, me and Casey's talked, I've talked about this 100 times. Casey's, I love Casey. Yeah, all the time now, but our first three records, no click.
Yeah, I know, infamously talking about Welcome Home, not having a right BPM to get it set to, because it's like in and out a little bit, but.
Yeah, it moves. Yeah, Led Zeppelin moves and Marvin Gaye moves and, even like some early hip hop stuff moves, because even though it was sampled, like they were taking it off tape that actually was, you know, slowing down. It creates, moving is not the enemy. Moving and feeling bad is the enemy. Moving, fucking In Keeping Secrets moves. I mean, we play In Keeping Secrets live to a click now, and some of the parts kind of don't work. Like, luck, they go by kind of quick. It's in that like symphony of parts where it's changing fast, but there's like the one part where it's like, this is way too fast. Holy shit. Oh my God, dude. Like, it's supposed to move, but having songs tied to the click live, not only does it make my job easier, it does kind of line you up to be together. And, we still play like Devil in Jersey City with no click. We still play some of the earlier stuff with no click, but, not a lot. The drummer from System of a Down asked me once, he's like, are you guys on a click? And I was like, yeah. He's like, man, I tried it. I don't like that. And I was like, no, you guys don't need it, man. You guys are killing it. Don't change a thing. Like, And I kind of felt like that with Coheed, except the click makes my job easier. I don't have to guess where, you know, I'm a human being, dude. I don't perfect time. If anybody out there actually has perfect time, well, then just get a computer, because what's perfect? Like, get the fuck out of here. Moving is okay, but like, there are certain times where like, I might be really, one time we were playing the Crowing. So I hadn't played the Crowing in a lifetime, and we're playing it really slower than the record. I hadn't listened to it. None of us had in a long time. So I think we're like, it's so adultish and like adult, like instead of kids really fast, it's adult. It's back in the pocket. One of the things about touring with Alice in Chains is how muddy they keep their shit. They don't push it. It's even, you know, and I get it. Like Lane's not there and Lane is a legend, but like, the band, dude, it's the same fucking band, Jerry, that drum, dude, they keep their shit muddy. And that's the hardest thing to do in a band, to not push it. You're filled with excitement. Your adrenaline's rushing. Of course, you're going to play the shit faster, not Alice in Chains. So early in my career, everything was fast. We were kids. Our job was to go up there and just fucking play the shit like we were on speed. I viewed this version of the Crowing as like really adult. I read a comment on YouTube. They're playing the Crowing at half the fucking tempo. It sounds like they don't even give a shit. And I'm like, this fucking piece of shit. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And I go listen to the Crowing and I'm like, holy shit, guys, we're playing the Crowing at half the tempo. Oh my God, it's so much faster. And so I play it for Claudio and he's like, dude, I'm like, that is so much. We didn't. So we picked it up, obviously. But, you know, maybe that's all, you know, we were kids. We were excited to be in the studio. Everything's fast. And tempos are funny, man. Like Favor House to a click in rehearsal, I can barely keep up with it. Live in front of you guys, I'm like, who slowed down the click? Like, this is too slow. And that's the same exact tempo. So you're, what you've eaten, how much sleep you've gotten, how much adrenaline, it all makes such a big difference. So the click makes my job easier, but short answer is yes. Yes. We played in the clip.
All right. And then my last one is just, it's just personal and that's fine. I just, like I said, we haven't interviewed you in a while, but I just wanted to know for my own sake, there are three movies I wanted to ask you about real quick and see if you've seen them. What did you think of the Scream reboot? What did you think of The Menu? And what did you think of Skinamarink, if you have seen it or not?
Man, dude, I feel like I'm letting you down. I haven't seen the Scream reboot because I will watch it one day, but I'm not like a huge Scream guy, believe it or not. Like, it's fine to me. I don't dislike Scream. I just never really jumped in. You know, I'm more of a Supernatural guy, and Scream was, and I get it, dude. I get the brilliance of Scream. Like, you know, Wes Craven's New Nightmare was like kind of hinting at some of that meta. And I love that. That's cool. Even though New Nightmare, when it came out, I hated it. I didn't get it. I was a kid. And they said Freddy was going to be like back to, you know, this was back to the original. And I just didn't think it was dark enough. So that's what we went to the theater to see, dark Freddy again. And it just wasn't dark enough for me. Now I love it. Now I get it. It went right over my head, dude. I was a child. I was 13. In fact, the only reason I saw Pulp Fiction is because I went to go see New Nightmare for the ninth time and it was out of the theater, but Pulp Fiction was playing and I was like, oh, it's not a horror, but people say it's good. I guess I'll go see it. I don't think I knew at 13 years old that movies other than horror could be violent, funny, cool, engaging. I thought that was only for horror. I just shot
Marvin in the face. Best part.
Yeah, dude, like fucking, and it changed my life. Pulp Fiction changed my life. I would only watch horror movies. I guess maybe some comedies, but I would really only watch horror movies. The Menu, I thought was fantastic. I loved The Menu. I thought it was so good. You know, for a movie to be good, the main goal, master of the obvious here, it's got to be engaging, right? And The Menu from the jump is so ultra engaging. The thing with art is what's engaging to me to the next person might totally not be engaging. So it's really tough, but I thought The Menu was aces. Skinamarink, I did not see. I have to remedy that.
Bro, you need to really prepare yourself before you watch it. It's fucking dark. Like, it's one of the hardest watches I've ever had since, like, since I can't remember the name of it. Fucking Robert Eggers' first film. Fucking God damn it, what the fuck is it called? Hereditary. Sorry. It's the hardest watch I've had since Hereditary. And
now I did read about skimmering. I always say it wrong. Isn't it like it looks really bad because it's like
it looks like VHS tape.
Yeah, but it's like and when I read about it, I was like, oh, I have to see this.
It's like $15,000 budget, like super like homemade vibes, but it's so scary. It's just so scary. There's no other way to describe it.
I won't be watching that in the next 7 days because I'm here alone at my house. My wife went to Michigan with my daughter. Thankfully, my mother-in-law is here, but she's like, you know, all the way on the other side of the house. So I'm like straight up alone. I had to cancel my trip to Michigan because there's too much going on here to leave. I can't leave with five projects going on my house. So I haven't been watching movies. I go through like TV show movie phases. So I'm in a TV show phase. I'm almost done with Righteous Gemstones. And then I go to bed watching Arrested Development for the 180th time. But before that, I did 30 Rock again. I cycle between the same five. Even if I'm watching a new show, when it's bedtime, I did 30 Rock. And when it's over, it hurts. Like, these are old friends to me. But I'll see him again in 2 months when I do 30 Rock again. But it goes 30 Rock, Arrested Development. American Dad is on that list. Partly because I love it and I think it's brilliant, but my friend Matt wrote for it for years. My friend Matt was here yesterday. He's like the showrunner on the new Fraggle Rock show. And he was like one of the head writers on New Girl. And he's really made a real nice life for himself. And there's another girl from Kingston, Molly. Her maiden name was Molly Metzler. But she created and wrote Mate, which just reached heights that are like, I can't believe a girl that I went to school with that I know. I got to text her and be like, Molly, I'm so floored to see. She called me famous once in like 2014. She was like, oh my God, Josh, you're famous. And now I get to be like, dude, you did it. And she was already writing for Shameless. She was doing big things on Broadway. But when Maid really landed, her star had risen to a place that's so singular, dude. She is like the golden child of Hollywood. I still have it in my head that I'm going to come up with an idea and pitch her. And she's going to like help me make it because we've always been friendly and she's just dope as hell. And she's a beautiful family. And I'm like honored that I know her. I can't believe that she reached those heights. I can believe because she's talented, but I just, you know, I know a lot of talented people and it doesn't pan out a lot of times, but she fucking... And then her brother, Blake, who I was kind of in a band with in high school, he's been an animator on South Park for like, I don't know, 15 years. So he's the guy who put the Coheed shit in South Park for the emo episode.
Oh, shit. You just fucking cracked some awesome. Shit open. That's wild. That's
awesome. Yeah, because he's totally fucking with me, too. But
that's hilarious. And especially with the fucking symbol and shit. That's fucking so funny.
That was him, like, fucking with me. And with the fans and with us, just and fucking with what the episode is doing in general. But yeah, it's awesome. But his name's Blake and he's just a terrific guy. You know, we talk here and there, you know how it is being adults, but I got to get up. I got to watch Skim Murder Inc. And the Scream thing I'll get into. The thing with Scream is I got to go all the way back to the beginning and go all the way through. Cause I've seen them all up to the last two. I didn't see the one before the remake either. So I'd like to reacquaint myself with the older ones, then watch the new one just because to just refamiliarize. And I will. I don't dislike Scream. I just don't like three, love it. Though.
You could just skip three. Jay and Silent Bob's in it. It's fucking crazy. Jack Black has dreads. It's a fucking nightmare.
Rob, what does it say about me that now I'm like, oh shit, I have to see three right away? Like,
I saw Jay and Silent Bob and I was like, oh fuck, there's no way.
That's hilarious, dude. Even though I love Jay and Silent, did you see Clerks 3?
Of course I did. Of course I watched Clerks. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. I'll watch.
Yeah,
I think fucking God damn it. Now I can't think of movie titles since we're already fucking here. But the one that's set in Jersey Girl, of course. Jersey Girl, I think, is his best movie, and you can fucking argue with me as the day is long.
No, I if not best, like top two. I mean, it's such a fantastic movie. It's a fantastic movie.
As a fucking dramatic actor and as a dad, that movie fucking affected me.
Yeah, dude.
I think Red State would like a word.
Oh, Red dude, State's awesome.
Red State is the most big dick moment in his entire fucking catalog, where he's just like, what if it's the fucking end of the world? Like, oh my God, that's yeah. So fucking just giga brain. What the fuck, dude?
Yo, what did you think of that last M. Night Shyamalan movie?
Old
Knock at the Cabin.
Oh, the I cabin haven't door. Seen it yet.
I'm a really big
M. Night fan.
Me too, yeah, but you know.
Just watch Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods is good.
Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Woods rules, dude.
It's Cabin in the Woods
rules. What it was.
It's good. I mean, but M. Night, here's the thing. Like,
you think Cabin in the Woods is merely good? That opening scene where they're just talking in the golf cart and they're just like sipping their coffee and then boom, Cabin in the Woods. The whole thing is just a wink and a nod to all the horror we like grew up with. It's so good. I love Cabin in the Woods. The ending
is one of the best endings for sure.
Oh, it's so tight, dude. It's so awesome. Red State's phenomenal. Jersey Girl, though, is phenomenal, dude. No argument. It is.
It gets
phenomenal.
Shit on, though, compared to everything else. Like Chasing Amy, I do like Chasing Amy. I like Clerks 1 and 2. I think Clerks 3, I really enjoyed. Like, I mean, for me, you know, for my money's worth.
Did you cry?
I did. Fuck, especially yeah. When a follow up to fucking to Chasing Amy, like, holy shit.
Yeah,
like I never thought we'd get closure on that shit, and then it just happened, and I was blown the fuck away.
Yeah, I bawled during. I tweeted about it. I added Kevin Smith, hoping he'd write me back because I'm a fan too. There's been a couple things that, you know, like missed my radar, I guess, but like I'm a fan of Kevin Smith. Like, I like Kevin Smith's movies. You know, like any true fan, I have my favorites. Jersey Girl is like. Right in the top. Rob brings up Red State. I probably put Jersey Girl before Red State, even though I love Red State. Jersey Girl is like the gift that keeps on giving. It's not the contrarian in me. When that movie came out, it was all about Ben and J-Lo, and the movie got shit on, and it was like, wait a second. I mean, Jersey Girl taught me to not listen to the mob because the movie was fantastic. It's a heartfelt, beautifully acted, wonderful story, like real deal movie, and people didn't give it a chance. People fucking wrote it off, and that kind of taught me to make up my own mind. And I love Jersey Girl. I watch it like, I don't know, once every 2 years because it's so good. But I haven't seen Red State in years. I might watch that tonight because Red State is like scary to me. So I'll watch Red State. All the only shit that's really scary to me is like demon stuff, or like, you know. Like, Jason doesn't scare me and Freddy doesn't scare me, but like,
yeah, don't watch Skin and Marink then. It's probably not for you right now.
Yeah, like possession stuff, dude. Like, so after my mom died, I told this story once about the handprint on my, I was watching the Paranormal Activity movies and I stood here the night my mom died and I reached, you know, you do crazy things when you're in like, you know, powerful grief. And I stood here alone with a towel wrapped around me, fresh out of the shower. And I reached my hand out with my eyes closed and I held it there for a long time. And I said, Mom, if you're here, let me know, is there more? Just touch me, just touch my hand. I don't even know if I'm speaking out loud or I'm saying it in my mind, but I hold my hand out so I can't really hold my arm up anymore. So it's like a good chunk of time. And then I go back to, because I'm a weirdo, watching the Paranormal Activity movies, which are effective to me. They scare me. I am scared. The next morning, I wake up, and there is a clear as fucking day handprint on my headboard, pointed this way. My wall is right here. Handprint. I show my brother. I show my father. I have a psychic come here to take a look. It's clear as day that it's a handprint. Only in the last year did I find out actually what it is. Sometimes I like to microwave up little Tostitos, right? And when you put the plate on the wood up here, each little Tostito makes, you know, Tostitos, when they burn through the steam, it steams the wood. And it looks like fingers. So now it looks like 30 handprints, but like it's just a mess of, that's what it is, bro. If I have pizza, it kind of makes like a shape. So I must have one day had a piece of pizza going this way. And if it's piping hot, I don't know if you guys can see it. There's white right there. That was in the shape of like a bony handprint. My mom died at 70 pounds. Like her fingers looked like bones.
Right.
These taquitos, when they steam through the wood, look like bony. It was like, but maybe it is a sign. Maybe that is a sign from my mom. Who knows? But the shit had me freaked, dude. Like, what did I invite in? That's not my mom. It don't feel like my mom. That feels like something scary. I was scared in here. So that possession shit, like, actually is effective to me. I won't watch The Exorcist anymore. I've seen it 100 times. I get it. It's brilliant. I don't want to watch it anymore. I don't want to serve as, like, a beacon to something that maybe I don't understand. Maybe we don't understand. So I'm good with that shit. Scream, all that shit. I could watch Scream tonight. Like, I'd be fine watching that alone. It's just like demon stuff actually scares me. But because I'm weird, who knows? I'll probably end up watching like one of them just to scare myself. And like, because I'm a weirdo. But that shit really does get me. Rob, you're the guy that can't watch movies where kids die, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have trouble with it. I have trouble with it. Okay.
No, so do I. It's deeply affects me.
I'm not saying that I'll never watch it, especially Skinamarink. If you like demons and kids stuff, that's just Skinamarink in a fucking nutshell. It's like,
I want to watch it. I want to watch it.
If you
so
put
bad.
Demons, specifically like sleep paralysis demons, that kind of idea with children, and it shot like Paranormal Activity. That's the kind of movie you're getting into.
Yeah, this paranormal, like sleep paralysis demons are the fucking story of my life. Yo, you guys know I have to go, right? It's fucking 9:20.
Bro, I know. I asked the question like 40 minutes ago. I'm sorry, man. What do you want me to say here? All right.
No, I know. I do this to Rob, my Rob too, where I'm like, I yell at him for how long it's taken, but I've talked the whole time. You get me interested. I get talking, but yeah, I have to go. I got to eat and I got to take my medicine. I was supposed to take it at 8.
Devin, I fucked up.
It's a quick question for Rob. So while Josh is making taquitos and pizza, well, what are you making? What are your go-to recipes and what do you like to eat as, you know, a band chef?
I cook, I do a lot of barbecue. But, you know, when you cook for bands, you run across a lot of, you know, vegans and vegetarians and people with restrictions. So, you know, over the years, I've developed, you know, all kinds of different recipes where I adapt. For example, I know when Mayday Parade is around, I'm going to make, you know, something vegetarian or vegan for the drummer of that band. But I know when my boys in Set It Off are here, I know they're going to get ribs. They want beef ribs and pork ribs, and that's what they do. So I would say the staple of what I started with was barbecue, but cooking with so many bands, you have to learn to adapt to make everybody happy and make everybody feel welcomed and comfortable.
Well, awesome.
Fuck, dude. I love Mayday Parade. I just need to say that. All right, my bad. Go ahead.
Well, you know, to wrap this up, thank you guys so much, seriously, for spending this evening with us and filling us in on Drum Set Confessionals and joining us on all things Coheed. So we'll wrap this up. Is there anything that you have coming up that you want to promote? Any of your social media pages, anything like that?
Yeah, I do a couple of things that, like, you know, we've got a couple of bookings at different parts of the country coming up. I'm working with a couple of medical conferences and that kind of stuff. But if people want to really help us contribute to this community, the best things they can do are follow us on the socials, interact with our posts, whether it's liking or commenting, going over to our YouTube page, watching our videos, responding to the videos, and then also go to drumsetconfessional.com, go to Read Shared Stories, If they have a story of their own about how addiction has touched their lives, it doesn't have to be their own addiction. It could be a family member or a friend or whatever. But go read some of the stories that are really, really incredible. And it took great bravery for these people to share these. And when people share their stories, it's done anonymously. Josh records video reactions to some of these stories. And then people can actually respond directly to the stories as well on the website. And here's the thing. In this next year, we're going to be dealing with literary agents, book publishers, booking agents. And if we show a larger influence in social media, then we are in a better position when we negotiate with these people. So if you really want to help Drumset Confessional, you'll help us by spreading the word through clicks, likes, shares, follows, and interactions, because that does two really important things. One, it gives us that greater leverage with the people we're going to be negotiating with at different corporate levels. But secondly, it gets our message out there, which is our point of doing this in the first place. So if your listeners can do that, we would be so happy and thrilled.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Thank you guys again so much for joining us. This has been another episode of the All Things Coheed podcast. I'm Devin.
I'm Josh.
I'm Rob Aronoff, the other Rob.
Oh, shit.
And I'm a guy named Rob. Thanks for joining us.